haven't had a chance to share. And now to share his experience, strength, and hope with us, we have Alex.
Hi, I'm Alex. I'm an alcoholic. it's nice to be here. I've never had a legal drink. I've been here before, but never to this room. I was actually thinking on my way over here that I've spoken at this meeting a couple of times, but every other time I've spoken here, I have come directly from the wake of a friend of mine who died as a result of drugs and alcohol. That's not the case tonight, so that's good. Just to give you a little bit of background about me and my where I come from. I was born and raised in downtown Brooklyn. I'm 32 years old. My anniversary is June 28th, 1995. So I'm coming up on 15 years in about another month, which is weird. I have a sponsor. I have a home group. I have sponsees. My sponsor has a sponsor. I work the steps. I work the steps with my sponsees. You know, basically, I do the things today. I do the things that were suggested to me in the beginning. I didn't do those things. I will say as a caveat, I did not necessarily do those things when they were originally suggested to me. It took me a long time, and it took me. Excuse me. That's the Cherry Coke Zero. I saved this. I only drink it on special occasions when I really need to get fucking amped up. I'm going to try to make it last. So, I say that. I guess I'll get into that a little bit later. To make a long story short, from pretty much as far back as I can remember, I never really felt comfortable. I didn't really ever feel like I fit in. I felt like I was different. I felt like you didn't like me. I felt like I wasn't part of the group. I grew up, like I said, in downtown Brooklyn, I didn't move around a lot. But for some reason, I switched schools a lot. Like every couple of years, I was the new kid again in school, which really just served to kind of reinforce those feelings that I had of being different. I was just constantly being the new kid, kind of over and over and over again. When I was about, I think one of the first really like alcoholic decisions that I remember making, when I was in fifth grade, I had started at another new school. So I'd started in September at this new school. And my birthday is the first week in October. So it was about a month into the school year. And, it was the weekend or whatever went off for my birthday. My aunt gave me this sweater, which can only really be described as Debbie Gibson's Electric Youth if it vomited on a Bill Cosby Coogee sweater, right? It was like this acrylic, like neon green and electric yellow and blue sweater, but also it was a Coogee sweater. So, Bill Cosby had those sweaters with the crazy wrinkles on them, right? So Biggie was also very fond of the Coogee sweater. So it was this like absurd sweater, but for whatever reason, I thought that sweater was fly. And I was like, this is it. I'm going to wear this sweater to school on Monday, and everybody is going to jock my sweater, and they're all going to want to be my friend, and they're all going to want to hang out with me, and they're all going to invite me over after school or whatever. I went into school on Monday with my electric blue Coogee sweater on, and it didn't really go down the way that I anticipated it might, and actually, in fact, you know, quite the opposite happened. My sweater, believe it or not, became the object of ridicule. Now the alcoholic part of that is that I was like, that's it. Never again. Like, I'm fucking sick and tired of feeling different, of being left out, of not feeling like I'm part of the group. This shit is dead. And from now on, I'm going to do whatever I have to do to be liked and to be part of the group and to feel like I'm fitting in. And that started me off on the next couple of years of my life of basically just sort of abandoning, like, really any sense of self, totally turning my back on whatever person I was becoming, and really just becoming as adept as I could at reading you, trying to figure out what it was that you wanted, trying to figure out what kind of person you liked, and being that person. You know, because for me, the most important thing became being liked, being part of the group. You know, and that was, you know, that was, you know, to the total detriment and abandonment of, you know, who I was or who I was becoming. A couple of years later, like a year or two later, I was part of that, like, I'm going to be whatever I have to be cool, I hung out with these guys that were older than me. I was in sixth and seventh grade, and I started hanging out with some guys who, you know, were like freshmen and sophomores in high school, and it was whatever. It was like I was like that little kid that would be around, and I would do anything that they told me to do, because I wanted to be, you know, I wanted to have that cachet that I was these guys' friends. And, you know, and they would be like, yo, go break that window. I'd go break that window. You know, they'd be like, go steal that thing. I would go steal that thing. You know what I mean? I would just do whatever I had to feel like I was part of the group. I started drinking with those guys. I started smoking weed with those guys. I learned something about myself, that I really, really like getting fucked up. A lot, right? Like, I like it. I like getting fucked up. I had a lot of fun, you know. I hanging out, smoking weed, you know, drinking 40s, whatever. You know, nothing crazy. That was fun. And very quickly, I started doing more and different drugs and drinking and stealing booze and drugs are a big part of my story. You know, when I was a kid, it was a lot easier. When I was using, it was a lot easier for me to actually get drugs than it was for me to get booze a lot of times. So, you know, there's a lot of drugs in my story. And things sort of moved along pretty quickly. I had my best friend and I were smoking weed together, and his stepfather was an older guy who'd been smoking weed for a long time. And, when he kind of figured out what we were doing, you know, I remember one night he came in, like, after my friend's mom had gone to sleep, and he came in and we smoked a joint, and we were kind of chilling, whatever, smoked his joint. And he was like, so what do you guys want to do? And we were like, I don't know. And we were like 13. And he was like, well, we could smoke another joint, or we could go uptown and get some coke, but you guys wouldn't want to do that, right? We were like, no, let's go uptown and get coke. You know, so we all piled in the Cadillac and went up to, like, you know, Washington Heights. And I remember I was in the back seat of the Cadillac. It was like a coupe, a two-door. And I remember he like, that long-ass door opening up, and he got out, and then he leaned in the back. His name was Alex, too, and he was like, Alex, get in the driver's seat. If anything happens, drive away. You know, it was like, you know, I mean, it was like, you know, and that, like, which was great for a time, you know, and then I started hanging out with this girl, and every once in a while, I would maybe be talking to this girl on the phone or whatever, and she would just sound different. You know, she sounded kind of weird on the phone every once in a while, not often, but every once in a while. And then, one night we were on the phone, And it hit me. It dawned on me. I was like, oh, shit. Like, she's fucking doped up. So I was outraged. I was livid, you know, because I think, you know, but I was about 16 when this conversation took place. And I think the first person that I was friends with who overdosed had overdosed a couple of months before this happened. And I figured out that this girl was doped up, and I was on the phone. I was like, what the fuck is wrong with you? I said, are you fucking stupid? Like, what the fuck is your problem? Like, you're going to wind up like this person. You're going to wind up like that person. You know what's going to happen. And she was on the other end of the phone. She said, you don't understand. She said, just do it once and you'll understand. And I was like, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. You know, but of course, you know, knowing what I know now about my alcoholism, you know, that started to turn over in my mind. You know, and then a couple weeks later, I thought, well, you know, maybe she's right. Maybe I should give this thing a chance. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, what do I don't know. I never did it. I mean, you know. So I called her up and I said, you know, I said, hey, you know, let's go cop a bag of dope. And you know, so that we went. You could still buy drugs on the Lower East Side at the time. And so we went over to the LES and we copped a couple bags of dope. And then we went to this girl, Dumb Jessica's dad's house on 27th Street. And I did a couple bumps of dope in the bathroom, and then I sat at this girl's dad's kitchen table for the next, I don't know, 7-8 hours with a big glass of water, with this girl sitting behind me, running her nails down my back, and I just thought, why have I been wasting my time with anything else? You know, and people, I hear a lot of, in meetings, people talk about that eureka moment, that feeling like I've arrived, like that was my moment. You know, it was like, I was like, this is it. I was like, this is how I want to feel for the rest of my life. And I gave it a good shot. I gave it the old college try. It didn't work out. But you know, in very short order, I was a junior in high school, and from that day until the day that I went to treatment, like 9 months later, very few, if any, days went by that I didn't get high. I dropped out of high school in about a month after I got high for the first time. I dropped out of high school. That's not true. I took a medical leave of absence. They wanted to know why I had lost so much weight. I said I was depressed. Right. So I took a medical leave of absence, which to me seemed like summer vacation early. And you know, me and this girl just got high. We just got high. That was all we did. You know, I was not a very good. I was a bad. Let me put it this way. I was a bad junkie, and I don't mean that I had a bad habit. Like, I was just bad at being a junkie, right? Like, I didn't know I had a habit, right? I had this job delivering vegetables, so I would drive around in this truck with a refrigerated delivery truck, and all day long I would be in and out of the back of the truck, getting the vegetables, bringing them to the restaurant, you know, all that stuff. And all day long I had the sniffles, I had the aches, I thought I had a cold, I had this constant cold, constantly I had this cold, which I was pretty sure was because I was going in and out of the back of this refrigerated truck all day. And then at the end of the day I would get high, and my cold would go away, and I would say to people, this is fucking amazing, I don't understand why they don't prescribe heroin to people with colds. Because every time I get high, my cold goes away. I'm not joking. I actually said that to people. Right around this time of year, actually, I know almost exactly when it was. The first week of May in 1995, I was circling the drain. I was in my neighborhood in Brooklyn. We had gone to see the Beastie Boys at Madison Square Garden the day before, which is another story I won't get into. But it was dope. I don't really remember it, but it was fresh. I have the ticket stub. Part of the upshot of the fact that I don't remember this show was that me and this girl got in this screaming match outside of Key Food in my neighborhood in Brooklyn, because we were both convinced that one of us was a junkie, but we were also convinced that it was the other one, right? And as a result of this argument that we had, I found out recently that I made a decision that I was going to clean up. So, you know, I didn't really know what that meant. So I went home and I didn't get high that night. And I think I took a bunch of Percocet and drank a 40. I didn't get high. I didn't do dope that night. And I was up all night. I didn't sleep. I didn't know why. Right. I felt like shit. I was fucking aching. You know, I was dope sick. Right. And I got up the next day and I went to work on the vegetable truck. And then I got off of work at the end of the day, and that's the beginning of June, right? You know, the beginning of May, kind of middle of May at this point, right around this time. I mean, it could have been today, 15 years ago. Who the fuck knows? I got off of the train at the end of the day, and now this is the first day that I hadn't done dope in like months, I got off the train, and where the train lets out, it's like a long street that looks down to the river, and it was like, you know, 6:30, 7:30, and the sun was like just about to start dipping below the horizon. It was this big orange disc just about to go down, just about to set, and I got off the train, and I saw the sun going down, and I was like, it's like, when the sun goes down, like, I'm going to go and cop. And I don't want to, but I know I'm going to. And there's nothing that I can do about it, you know? Because where I was copping, the dudes didn't come out until the sun went down. And it was like, I saw that sun. It was like 28 days later. You know what I mean? It was like, yo, when the sun goes down, like, it's popping off. And there is nothing I can do about it. You know, and in that moment, I felt completely alone. I felt totally alone because I knew that I couldn't not get high. I knew I was going to get high, and I knew there was nothing that I could do that was going to stop me. And I knew that I needed help, but I didn't know how to ask for it. I didn't know who to ask for it. I didn't know about AA. I didn't know that there were places like this that I could go. And so what did I do? So I kept getting high, you know, and I kept getting high for like another couple of weeks, and then fate intervened in the form of my best friend from growing up, who did, you know, the unthinkable, called my mom, right? He told my mom that I was strung out on dope, right? Which, you know, for a long time, I kind of left that out of my qualification because it's not very cool to be like, yeah, my best friend called my mom. My best friend called my mom, and the next thing I knew, you know, my parents had been, I woke up the next morning, my parents had been divorced for 20 years, were sitting on the sofa together, and I was like, ooh, yeah, exactly. I was like, that's not good. I didn't say anything. They didn't say anything. I just went and got in the shower, and I was like, I guess I'm going to rehab. And I did. I went to rehab, and at first I was like convinced that I was pretty sure that I had an issue with heroin, but I was also pretty convinced that like I could still drink. I didn't see why I couldn't drink. I didn't see why I couldn't smoke weed. I didn't see why I couldn't smoke crack, because I only smoked crack when I found it on the street. Which happens more frequently than you'd think when you're walking around like this all the time. And over the course of, I spent my summer vacation at rehab in between my junior and senior years of high school. And slowly, you know, going to meetings and being in treatment with guys that had been to treatment, you know, 20, 30 times before, dudes that were, you know, in their 40s and 50s and 60s, I identified with the feelings, and I identified with their alcoholism. And at 17 years old, I did not know much But what I did know was that I knew in my heart that if I kept doing what I was doing, I was going to wind up exactly where these dudes were. And I didn't know what was going to happen if I got sober or if I didn't use and drink one day at a time. But I did know that if I kept using and drinking, I was going to wind up where these dudes were. I want to say, you know, in the beginning, it was like every day felt like a fucking eternity. It felt like it took me my entire life up to that point to get 30 days. 90 days was like unthinkable. You know, the reason why I mention that is because, like, when I had those days and I thought about using, the next thought that I had, and I'm so grateful that these thoughts popped into my head, I was like, fuck that. These are my fucking days, and I'm not giving them to anyone. You know what I mean? Like, I fucking suffered and cried and fought and clawed to get every single one of those days. And the idea that I was just going to give that shit away and have to fucking suffer and cry and claw and fight to get those back again, I was like, no fucking way, dude. You know? Now, in the intervening decade between then and about 3 years ago, a lot of shit happened, which, for the sake of time, I'm not going to get into. But I want to talk about something really profound that happened to me when I had about 12 years. Oh my God, I'm getting emotional already. Now, a day at a time, I had learned how to not drink and not get high, right? And I had been able to not drink and not get high for, I think when this experience that I'm going to talk about happened, I think I was sober just about 12 years. I had learned how to not drink and not get high, and I had not gotten high or had a drink for 12 years. The one thing I had never learned how to do was not be afraid, right? And I walked around every day for those 12 years with this, like, knot in my stomach. Sometimes it was worse, sometimes it was better, sometimes it was bigger, sometimes it was smaller, but it was there, right? And the one thing that I could never, like, rationalize, intellectualize, figure out was how to not be afraid, right? And I was training for a marathon, and I was spending a lot of time running with this dude who was sober, and he was like a guy that in some ways I looked up to him, right? Like, I'm older than he is, I'm sober, you know, like 10 years more than he is, but in a lot of ways I looked up to this guy because he, to me, on the outside, he looked like the type of dude that I wanted to be, right? Like, kickboxer. Just fucking sleeved up, right? Like, tough guy, right? He looked like the type of dude that, like, is not afraid of shit, right? And we were running one day. We're running by the water, right? We're running along, and at the time, this guy was a bartender, and he was like, oh shit, man. He was like, yo, these fucking guys were in the bar last night. They were fucking hammered. They were driving me crazy. I had to go in the bathroom and pray like 3 times. And I went running along and I went like this. I went, whoa. I reached out. I put my hand on his chest. I stopped him. I was like, hold up. I said, you pray? And he said, yeah. And I was like, hold on, like, on your knees? And he went, yeah. And I was like, yo, man, how do you do that? And he was like, well, what do you mean? He said, you know, I come home, you know, he said, I get home from work, I go in the bathroom, I get on my knees, and I say my prayer. And then he told me what his prayer was. And I said, yo, man, I said, wow, I can't do that. And he said, what do you mean? And I said, well, I tried, but I can't do that. And that's true. I had tried. Over the years that I had been sober, I would go to a meeting, I would hear somebody share, I would hear somebody qualify, I would hear somebody, you know, that I respected, and they would talk about prayer, and I would go, ooh, that's, I need to do that. I should do that. And I would make a commitment that I, from then on, every day, I was going to pray. And then next morning, I would get up and I would hit my knees and I would pray. Right? And then the day after that, I would get up and I'd make a cup of coffee. And I'd be drinking my coffee and I'd be like, ooh, ooh, I forgot to pray. And I would pray. And then the next day after that, I would wake up, I'd get in the shower, I'd make a cup of coffee, I'd leave the house, I'd be on the train, and I'd be like, oh, fuck, fuck, I fucking forgot to pray. And it would happen like that until it was like I was getting in bed at the end of the day, and I'd be like, oh, shit, fucking, I forgot to fucking pray. And then I would just forget, and then it would be gone. You know what I mean? It would just be gone. Right? And that whole process would take about 7 or 8 days. So this guy told me, in very simple language, he explained to me his process of connecting to his higher power. And in that moment, it was like somebody turned on a light switch, right? It was like it all made sense to me. I was like, oh, that's so simple. That's so simple, right? There's a loving God that he's looking out for me. I'm going to wrap it up. It's like there, you know, it just all made sense. All the things I had ever heard, I was like, right, there's no fucking way I could have stayed sober for 12 years without something out there taking care of me, looking over me. And the next day I went home, or I got up the next morning, the alarm went off, I hit my knees and I prayed. And every day, almost 90%. Of those days. Because, you know, it's not like when I first started dating my girlfriend, it was weird. I didn't want to pray in front of her. It's not sexy. It's not sexy, right? That's what I thought. But I got to say, like, I like to say that I had a spiritual experience that was a white light experience of the educational variety, right? And, you know, the reason why I like to talk about that when I'm qualifying is because that relationship with a higher power has released me from the fear that I carried around in my stomach for 12 years. You know, not entirely. It's still there. I got some shit going on. I'm a little afraid. But for the most part, right, I don't walk around in fear of everyone and everything the way that I did when I was drinking, when I was using, and when I first got sober, because I have a belief that no matter what happens, like, I'm going to be taken care of and I'm going to be okay. And the very last thing that I want to say, because this is fucking real talk, right? About a year ago, a little less than a year ago, I was driving down from Providence with a friend of mine who was sober 11 years. And he was telling me, successful guy, tons of money, like one of the top dudes in his field, by all accounts, successful, right? And we were driving down from Providence late one night, and he was telling me, he was like, yo, man, he was like, I don't know if I want to be sober anymore. He was like, you know, I've been doing this. He was like, I've been sober for 11 years. He's like, look at everything I've done. Like, I'm successful, I'm rich, like, you know, this, that, and the other thing. He got, you know, houses in L.A., houses in New York, like, fucking fresh cars, all that shit. Right? He's like, can't I just have a year? He's like, why can't I just have a year? And we talked about some stuff, and I said, you know, it sounds like you might be looking for a material solution to a spiritual problem. I said, this fucking crazy thing happened to me when I had 12 years. And I told him the story that I just told you guys. And after I was done, he said, yeah, man. He's like, you see, I think I need to have a spiritual experience. But I think I need to relapse to have a spiritual experience. I know, it's crazy. I didn't know what to say. Right? That was in like June, the very beginning of June of last year. And on August 28th, I found that dude dead in his apartment. He relapsed on a Sunday, and he was dead on Friday. You know what I mean? Like, that is crazy. You know, to me, for years, I heard people talk about that. I heard people say, don't go out. Don't relapse. This guy relapsed and he died. And I thought it was hyperbole. I thought it was like, yeah, that guy relapsed and then 3 years later he got in a drunk driving accident. You know, my boy relapsed and then he died 4 days later. You know? You know, what I was saying about the days, if you got it, hold on to it. Because that's your time, man. You know? I know people say don't worry about time and all that shit, and don't worry about it. But like, if you got it today, don't give it up, man. Because best case scenario, you're back here counting days. Worst case scenario, your boy finds you dead in your apartment. You know? I mean, I don't want to be melodramatic or anything, but like, that's just like, you know, that's been weighing on my mind because it's right around this time of year that we had that conversation, and it's right around this time of year that I was circling the drain and that I eventually got sober. Man, I'm coming up on 15 years. I have never been more grateful for AA, you know, for my relationship with a higher power, for the existence of this program. I mean, every day I wake up, I'm more grateful than I was the day before. So with that, I'm going to just wrap it up. Thanks, guys. Thanks.